At lunch, she told her husband, musical experts say there really is no such thing as a tone-deaf person. If anybody seems so, it is only because he has not had a chance to be carefully enough trained. Her husband looked at her quickly. Oh, all right, he said. All right, have it your own way. But he leaned to pat her hand. You're swell, he told her. I don't see how you ever keep it up as you do. Gosh, it's 1 o'clock already. During the weeks between then and the Christmas entertainment, she saw no more than he how she could ever keep it up. The little boys had no difficulty in keeping it up. They had nothing else to do at 4 o'clock. They were in the indestructible age between the frailness of infancy and the taut, nervous tensions of adolescence. Wherever she led, they followed her cheerfully. In that period of incessant pushing against barriers which did not give way, she was the one whose flag hung limp. Assiduous reading of those two reference books on teaching music taught her that there were other approaches than the frontal attack on the tune they wanted to sing. She tried out ear experiments with them, of which she would never have dreamed without her library books. She discovered, to her dismay, that sure enough, just as the authors of the book said, the little boys were musically so far below scratch that without seeing which piano keys she struck, they had no idea whether a note was higher or lower than the one before it. She adapted and invented musical games to train their ear for this. The boys, standing in a row, their backs to the piano, listening to hear whether the second note was uphill or downhill from the first note, thought it as good a game as any other, rather funnier than most, because so new to them. They laughed raucously over each other's mistakes, kidded and joshed each other, ran a contest to see who came out best, while the mother, aproned for cooking, her eye on the clock, got up and down for hurried forays into the kitchen where she was trying to get supper. David's older brother and sister had naturally good ears for music. That was one reason why the mother had not dreamed that David had none. When the two older children came in from school, they listened incredulously, laughed scoffingly, and went off to skate or to rehearse a play. Little Janie, absorbed in her family of dolls, paid no attention to these male creatures of an age so far from hers that they were as negligible as grown-ups. The mother toiled alone, in a vacuum, with nobody's sympathy to help her, her great stone rolling downhill as fast as she toilsomely pushed it up. Not quite in a vacuum. Not even in a vacuum. Occasionally the others made a comment. Gee, Mom, those kids are fierce. You can't do anything with them. Say, Helen, an insurance man is coming to the house this afternoon. For heaven's sake, keep those boys from screeching while he is here. A person can't hear himself think. So she thought, with silent resentment, her task was not only to give up her own work, to invent and adapt methods of instruction in an hour she could not spare, but also to avoid bothering the rest. After all, the home was for the whole family. They had the right to have it the background of what they wanted to do, needed to do. Only not she, not the mother. Of course. She faltered many times. She saw the ironing heaped high, or Janie was in bed with a cold, and as 4 o'clock drew near, she said to herself, Now today I'll just tell the boys that I cannot go on with this. We're not getting anywhere anyhow. So when they came storming in, hungry and cheerful and full of unquestioning certainty that she would not close that door she had half opened for them, she laid everything aside and went to the piano. As a matter of fact, they were getting somewhere. She had been so beaten down that she was genuinely surprised at the success of the exercises ingeniously devised by the authors of those books. Even with their backs to the piano, the boys could now tell infallibly whether a second note was above or below the first one. Sure, they even thought it distinctly queer that they had not been able to, at first. Never paid any attention to it before, was their own accurate surmise as to the reason. They paid attention now, their interest aroused by their first success, by the insistent practicing of the others in their classroom, by the Christmas entertainment thrill which filled the schoolhouse with suspense. Although they were allowed no part in it, they also paid close attention to the drill given the others, and sitting in their seats, exiled from the happy throng of singers, they watched how to march along the aisle of the assembly hall, decorously, not too fast, not too slow, and when the great moment came for climbing up the platform, how not to knock their toes against the steps. They fully expected, wasn't a grown-up teaching them, to climb the steps to the platform with the others, come the evening of the entertainment. It was now not on the clock that the mother kept her eye during those daily sessions at the piano. It was on the calendar. She nervously intensified her drill, but she remembered carefully not to yell at them when they were wrong, not to screw her face into the grimace which she felt, not to clap her hands over her ears and scream, "Oh, horrible! Why can't you get it right?" She reminded herself that if they knew how to get it right, they would of course sing it that way. She knew, she had been a mother for 16 years, that she must keep them cheerful and hopeful, or the tenuous thread of their interest and attention would snap. She smiled. She did not allow herself even once to assume the blighting look of patience. Just in time, along about the second week of December, they did begin to get somewhere. They could all sound, if they remembered to sing softly, and to listen to themselves, a note, any note, within their range she struck on the piano. Little Peter turned out, to his surprise and hers, to have a sweet, clear soprano. The others were, well, all right, good enough. They started again, very cautiously, to sing that tune. To begin with, "It came," having drawn a deep breath and letting it out carefully. It was right. They were singing true. She clapped her hands like a girl. They did not share her overjoyed surprise. That was where they had been going all the time. They had got there, that was all. What was there to be surprised about? After that, it went fast. The practicing of the air, their repeating it for the first skeptical and then thoroughly astonished teacher, their triumphant report at home, "She says we can sing it good enough. She says we can sing with the others. We practiced going up on the platform this afternoon."